Dozens of Czech waterways are at risk of flooding as May rains reach their highest levels for years. Business conditions in the country have worsened since last year, says the head of the Czech Chamber of Commerce. And the famous cartoon figure Krteček is to appear on a Formula One car. Water levels at several dozen points across the Czech Republic have risen to flood levels, or near to it, after 2 weeks of above-average rainfall, meteorologists have warned. The greatest threats are along the Smjeda River in the Liberec region of northern Bohemia and the Bečva River, cutting through the town of Přerov, North Moravia, according to the Czech Hydrometeorological Institute. Heavy rainfall warnings are in place in the northeastern tip of the Pardubice region, the north of the Olomouc region, and the western part of the Moravian Silesian region. Overall, this has been a dry winter and spring. Czech authorities are more concerned in the long term about drought. Business conditions in the Czech Republic have gotten worse since the last meeting of the Czech Chamber of Commerce in May 2018. The Chamber's president, Vladimír Dlouhý, told delegates gathered at its annual meeting on Thursday. He criticized trade unions for raising their demands in areas such as increases in minimum wages. He also slammed the government for accepting these demands and said that left-wing political parties that were unsuccessful in the last parliamentary elections have too much influence in the country's economic and social policies. The meeting was attended by over 250 delegates, including Czech President Miloš Zeman, ministers and representatives from parliamentary parties. However, Mr. Dlouhý pointed out that the Social Democrats, who are in government, sent no representative. Home Credit Group is set to undergo an initial public offering on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange after the summer. The Czech-based consumer lender has appointed Citigroup, HSBC Holdings and Morgan Stanley to lead the initial public offering, a Reuters source reported on Thursday. The source said that Home Credit is looking to raise at least $1 billion, but cautioned that the final figure could change depending on the valuation. Home Credit Group's majority shareholder is PPF Group, controlled by Czech billionaire Petr Kellner. The famous Czech cartoon figure Krteček, known in English as Little Mole, is set to appear on Alfa Romeo Formula One team race cars driven by pilots such as Kimi Räikkönen and Antonio Giovinazzi. Team director Frederic Vasseur told journalists at a press conference that the character could help bring a new audience to the sport, particularly hundreds of thousands of children. Krteček has achieved global popularity since the character was created by cartoonist Zdeněk Miller in 1956. Czech President Miloš Zeman famously took a Little Mole soft toy figure during his visit to China in 2014, and another Little Mole toy also made it to space in 2011 as part of the mission of Space Shuttle Endeavour. Archaeologists have announced the discovery of a burial site that houses tombs from the Neolithic era all the way to the early Iron Age period near the town of Slaný in central Bohemia. Items include prehistoric tombs, ceramics, stone arrowheads, copper daggers, and dozens of skeletons. The discoveries were made during one of the largest archaeological excavations conducted in Bohemia, which started in August 2018 and ended this May. The dig took place ahead of the construction of a highway bypass near Slaný. A new production factory for multiple Skoda car models, as well as other Volkswagen vehicles, will be created in either Turkey or Bulgaria, the weekly magazine Škodovatský odborář reports. Skoda trade union boss Jaroslav Povšík told the outlet that Turkey is seen as having solid infrastructure, but Bulgaria is another option due to it being a more politically stable location and an EU member. The trade unions have said that they will demand an answer from the company leadership about whether the project will impact employment in the Czech Republic and how it will benefit the company's business plan. In sport, football club Slavia Prague took home the Czech Cup on Wednesday evening, beating Baník Ostrava by a score of 2-0. It marks the first double for the Red and Whites, this year's first league champions in 77 years. Slavia midfielders Tomáš Souček and Lukáš Masopust scored in the 37th and 77th minutes, a symbolic time not lost on fans. Had Baník Ostrava won the competition, the Moravian Silesian club would have qualified for the preliminary round of next season's Europa League. Slavia had won the Czech Cup four times before, in 97, 99, 2002 and 2018. Baník have won it only once, in 2005. As for the weather, temperatures are set to rise to 20 degrees Celsius on Friday, with rain expected to stop but return across most of the country on Saturday. Storms are likely to take place during this weekend in parts of Moravia and the Vysočina region. My name is Tom McEncrow, and that is all the news for now. Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up in today's programme, a chance encounter at Machu Picchu puts MPs' travel expenses in the spotlight. Czech archaeologists trace ancient sea routes in a Neolithic dugout replica. And later we talk to Steve Gove, the director of the Prague Fringe Festival, which is just about to start its 18th season. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The subject of MPs' travel expenses is in the spotlight after Czech radio reported that a group of legislators visited an exotic tourist destination while on a taxpayer-funded trip to Peru. The politicians say they themselves purchased tickets to enter Machu Picchu. However, their hotels and flights were covered by the Chamber of Deputies. Ian Willoughby looked into the story.
Pane prezidente, můžete prosím říct, co tady děláte?
In this video recorded last Friday at Machu Picchu in Peru, Czech radio journalist Janek Kropa tries, with little success, to interview Miloslav Kala, the president of the Supreme Audit Office. The top official was visiting the ruins of the ancient Inca city with five MPs from the Chamber of Deputies Audit Committee, which makes sure the state's money is correctly spent. The group were based in the nearby tourist town of Chusco for 3 days out of a work trip that involved the same number of days in the capital, Lima. Mr. Kala said the group had themselves purchased tickets to the site. However, the Chamber of Deputies, and by extension taxpayers, covered their hotels, flights, interpreters and per diems. Committee member Roman Kubicek of ANO offered Czech radio's journalists this explanation as to why they had visited Chusco.
Protože jsme dostali informaci.
We received information about the resolution of regional problems with waste. We established regional cooperation and came here within the framework of the offers we received. You can verify with the Czech ambassador that the offers concerned energy, water and environmentally friendly destruction of waste.
The politician's trip to Peru, which cost an estimated 750,000 crowns, has put the issue of such travel in the spotlight, raising questions over whether elected officials are squandering public money. Top 09 politician Miroslav Kolosek said he believed 80% of such travel actually involved excursions. Analyst Tomáš Pojar said there was no way that a visit by the Audit Committee to Peru, or indeed anywhere outside Europe, could make sense. Mr. Pojar also referred to his own experience when he served as Czech ambassador to Israel.
If members of a committee visit Israel's Knesset, it's absolutely logical that they would also visit the old city of Jerusalem, or Bethlehem, which is just 10 kilometers away. It's something else if it's a question of 3 days, plane travel and staying in hotels, when the costs for the taxpayer are high. In that case, it should be voluntary, and everybody should pay for the holiday part themselves. Mělo být na dobrovolnosti a na tom, že si každý na tuto
dovolenkovou část cesty přispěje. Novinky.cz reported that Czech MPs will this year travel to such destinations as Mexico, China, Vietnam, Morocco and Jordan. The Chamber of Deputies has an annual travel budget of 30 million crowns, while the Czech Senate has 13 million crowns for that purpose.
And that was Ian Willoughby with that report. Now, Monoxylon is the Greek term for a vessel chiselled out from a single tree trunk. It's also the name of a Czech-led experimental archaeological expedition, which first set off in such a craft back in 1995. The aim then and now is to validate, in practice, assumptions and hypotheses about human migration in the Neolithic age, some 8,000 years ago. Brian Kennedy.
After 2 years of preparation, the Monoxylon 3 team this weekend loaded their hollowed-out boat onto a trailer in eastern Bohemia bound for the Greek port of Lavrion. If all goes well, on Saturday they will begin island hopping to Milos, an historic source of obsidian or volcanic glass, and 400 kilometers and just over 2 weeks later land their dugout canoe in Crete. University of Hradec Králové professor Radomir Tichý, who literally built the center of experimental archaeology in the nearby town from the ground, is the expedition's leader.
The Monoxylon 1 expedition took place in 1995 across the Aegean Sea. At that time, it was all still rather hypothetical. But then the Italians published findings from Lake Bracciano, north of Rome, about dugouts that likely crossed the Mediterranean during the Neolithic period, the Younger Stone Age. The boat we built in 1998 for Monoxin 2 was longer, more seaworthy. We sailed the western Mediterranean from Sicily to Portugal in five stretches. And for Monoxylon 3, we've modified the dugout to much more closely resemble the one discovered in Lake Bracciano. Plus, we'll be crossing the eastern Mediterranean, so it should be really very, very interesting.
The team's 9-meter-long vessel, a replica of the 8,000-year-old Italian boat, weighs in at some 1.3 tons. It will be managed by two rotating crews of about 10 people. They will be accompanied by a modern-day catamaran that can serve as a floating pier in particularly foul weather. Monoxylon 3 will retrace sea routes fueled by trade in obsidian from Sicily to the coast of Tunisia. Obsidian from Milos has been found in the famous Knossos labyrinth in Crete. That suggests a line could have been realized by two routes, from Santorini to Crete, which is the more demanding, or from Peloponnese to western Crete. Expedition organizer Radomir Tichý chose the more difficult one. Doing so should contribute more to understanding the spread of early agricultural cultures in the Mediterranean during the Younger Stone Age. Their last stretch, at over 100 kilometers, is an important test of distances simple Neolithic-era vessels could traverse in one go. Also, how well a vessel made from one tree trunk could transport not only people, but crops and livestock.
And that was Brian Kennedy with that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature of the day. The 18th edition of the annual Prague Fringe Festival is set to start on Friday. Theatres, cafes and many other spaces in the Czech capital's picturesque Malostrana district will host a week-long programme packed with events ranging from theatre to music. The festival is the brainchild of Scotsman Steve Gove, who has been based in the Czech capital since the 1990s. When we spoke, he told me that the festival's relatively small size is actually an advantage.
Edinburgh is wonderful, Perth's wonderful in Australia, Brighton's a fantastic fringe as well. They're all big fringes, and you know, there's a different experience you get out of those. But what you get out of coming to Prague, it's a much more manageable festival, both for artists and for audiences. We decided as well that how we wanted to grow the festival was to grow the audiences. We have about 11,000 tickets for sale every year. And we thought, why would we want to expand the number of tickets available when we're not completely sold out? So instead of doing that, we put our focus on building the audiences. And the artists really appreciate it. They come to Prague. Many of the performances are sold out. There's a really good atmosphere. And they don't have to necessarily stand in the streets as they might do in Edinburgh. And Jim Haynes, one of the key characters in the very early days of the Edinburgh Fringe, when he came to Prague Fringe a few years ago, I said, you know, give me a quote. What did you think? And he said, Prague, it's like Edinburgh in the 70s, intimate, fun and friendly. And we kind of plastered that everywhere. It's what we do best. We like to keep it small and compact. And it seems to work for audiences and artists.
This year, the festival will present a large percentage of shows performed and created by women. What made you decide to focus on female artists this year?
The process of programming the Fringe Festival is an unusual one, perhaps, by comparison to some festivals. In August, every year, we put out a call for shows. So it's an open arts event that anybody can apply to perform at, in a similar vein to Edinburgh and all the other fringes around the world. But what then happens, unlike a lot of fringes, is that by September, we have a large amount of applications which we have to sift through. And very, very quickly, during the planning process in September this year, we realised just how strong the work from women was. And we decided then and there that this was going to be one of our big themes this year.
For people coming to see some performances at the Fringe this year, what would you say are some of the highlight performances?
Well, we always have a lot to choose from. There's 52 different shows coming to the Fringe over the 9-day period, and it's always difficult to highlight one or two. What I like to do is I like to highlight themes, and for people who pick up the brochure and think, God, how do I start? There's so much to do. I think a good thing would be to just look at the categories and just create a theme for yourself. So if you fancy your theme to be Scotland, click Scotland and all those shows will pop up. If you fancy non-verbal Scottish work, click the non-verbal button too, and then it'll refine the search down a bit. We've got shows from all sorts of different countries this year. We've got a brilliant Australian and Kiwi theme running, as well as always a lot of shows from Scotland, as I've mentioned, and England too. If I was going to highlight one, I always like to highlight Henry Naylor's work. Henry Naylor is an excellent writer of theatre. He's been round the block quite a few times. He's very well known for being one of the writers and creators of Spitting Image in the 80s. The satirical British puppet theatre television programme. But in the last few decades, he's been writing new work, which has always started its life at the Fringe Festival, usually in Edinburgh, and then it goes on to tour the world. He always gets high accolades wherever he goes. And we've been very lucky to have him at the Fringe the last 3 years. And last year, he brought a very fresh piece of work to Prague, called Games, which I'm sure some of the listeners saw, and it had never been previewed anywhere else before. So it was kind of like in preparation for then taking it on to Edinburgh. And since then, it's gone to tour Australia, lots of different places in England as well. And this year, he's bringing a brand new work, which none of us know very much about, called Crime Story. We're just excited to have him as part of the wonderful collection of work at the Fringe. But he's definitely one to look out for. But I will warn you, his shows always, always sell out. So if anybody's interested in seeing that show, they've definitely got to get tickets.
You tend not just to have some great shows in your lineups, but also some pretty original venues. I was just wondering, do you have any of those this year as well?
The two newest venues that we have at the Fringe are Café Club Myshenska and Golden Key. The Golden Key venue is in a beautiful cellar of a 15th century building, which we came across when we were on a tour by the manager there. And she said, oh, we don't need to go downstairs. It's just a cellar. And I said, no, we do need to go downstairs. It's a cellar. And we went down and we thought that this was a very exciting space and that we would turn it into a tiny little theatre. So there's 20 seats in there. We've used it for a couple of years now, but I definitely would encourage anyone who hasn't visited that venue to check it out, as well as Café Club Myshenska, which I mentioned. But as I say, we're always snooping around. There are always new spaces, new old spaces that we discover. And we've got a couple which might appear on the scene next year.
Your festival is mainly in English, but artists also sometimes use different types of communications. A few years back, I read that one of the artists spoke in gibberish, whatever that is. And you already talked about nonverbal shows. So what specific type of nonverbal artistic methods will be used this year?
Well, the good thing about the non-verbal aspect is that it kind of opens the Fringe up to locals who don't have any English language skills. There's definitely no gibberish spoken at the Fringe this year, as far as I know, but we have got a handful of non-verbal shows. In terms of categories, we also have a category which we've had for a couple of years now called Easy English. So again, if visitors are not so confident with their English skills, whether they be Czechs or Japanese or one of the over 100 nationalities of people that come to the festival, then they can definitely take a chance with the Easy English as well as the non-verbal. So that's just a kind of an orientational guide to helping people choose something that they're comfortable with in terms of language.
The Prague Fringe has a lot of genres. I was just wondering, are you going to have any new genres included this year? Or if you could just give us a rundown of what sort of stuff people can actually see.
The largest genre of events that we have is theatre. The Fringe Festival is the English language theatre festival in Prague. That was one of the reasons that we wanted to start it almost 20 years ago. But we also have other categories or other genres. For example, there's a little bit of comedy, there's a little bit of music, and this year we even have a film showing for the very first time in the Czech Republic, a documentary film about a character and dear friend called Jim Haynes, who was one of the founding fathers of the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh in the 50s and 60s. He's a fantastic advocate for the arts. And if you haven't heard of Jim Haynes, it's absolutely recommended that you come and see his film, which is playing on the last day of the festival.
One thing I found interesting is that part of the festival is the Fringe Club, where audience members, performers, and also the staff of the festival can meet each other. So how does that work exactly?
Yeah, well, basically, from about 11:30 onwards, usually things kick off properly about 12 o'clock. We have different themed nights every night of the Fringe. So it's a way that for everyone to gather in the same place. That's artists, technicians, volunteers, audience members all come together and hang out in the bar. Sometimes we have quiet bar nights. We don't encourage people to stay out late every single night. But we have a Scottish Ceilidh night, which has now become a bit of a tradition. It's really popular. The last night of the Fringe is always a lot of fun. We have the award ceremony, and it's not the official awards of the festival. It's the fun, flippant awards. We call them the Fringies. And it's a packed out night. Everyone comes along, and we traditionally stay as long as possible, and for those who are able to hang on till the bitter end, we all troop out onto Charles Bridge for the sunrise. Some years it's more spectacular than others. I'm hoping the clouds will clear by that point, but it's a beautiful way to end the festival every year. But yeah, there's something different every night. Sometimes it's just the bars just open. Other nights we'll have a silly disco night or whatnot. But it's a way of getting people together. And they're all free entry, so it's just easy to drop by if you want to come.
One of the things which you've been highlighting this year is the so-called Friends of the Fringe scheme. So what is that exactly, and how does it benefit those thinking of becoming a friend of the Fringe?
Well, we're always trying to think of ways to raise more money for the festival. It's an organisation that relies on sponsorship and funding. And we have a tremendous group of people every year who donate to the festival. And we've sort of formalised it a bit more over the last couple of years by setting up the Friends of the Fringe scheme. This year, for our 18th birthday, we thought we'd go a step further, and we thought we'd introduce massive discounts for people who sign up. So we have an 18% discount. So there's a feel-good factor all round. You get to contribute something to the festival, you get discounts on your tickets, as well as that you get discounts at our partner food outlets, which includes a couple of places very close to the festival. All the details are in the brochure. One of the other perks which might suit some of the Friends of the Fringe is that we have a skip the queue system, which means that if you're a friend of the Fringe, you can choose your seats ahead of other customers.
Speaking of audiences, I mean, the Prague Fringe is mainly in English, but it's in Prague. What sort of audiences do you get predominantly? Is it Czechs or is it tourists, foreigners?
A lot of the audiences that we get are tourists, and tourists who have specifically come to Prague for the festival. We've got dozens and dozens of friends right across the world who are either on their way here already or are standing by to jet off back to Prague to come to the Fringe Festival, which is fantastic. About 15% of the audiences are expats, 25% are Czech. So it changes every year. We don't sort of survey that every year, but that's the figures from a couple of years back. So we're quite pleased with the balance, but we always like to do marketing on our Facebook pages and things that will also encourage young Czechs. It's the kind of audience that we'd like to develop the most.
I guess no one would argue against the fact that Prague Fringe has become quite a success since it was founded. I was wondering, is there something when you look back in retrospect you would say, oh, that really helped us? Or, you know, what was a really sort of important factor in making Prague Fringe a success?
In the early days, it was really difficult to get the word out. You know, we were sticking posters up in cafes and having adverts in the Prague Post, which existed back then. And we relied very much on that type of method of encouraging people to come to the festival. But, you know, since social media kicked off, I mean, love it or hate it, it has probably allowed us to spread the news further and quicker. That's definitely been a huge help in the last few years.
And that was Scotsman Steve Gove, the brainchild and current director of the Prague Fringe Festival, talking about what's in store this year. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that is all for now from me, Tom McEncrow. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.